sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets roll and more troubles on the horizon. Acts of terror in Paris are set to unnerve markets. Major failure in former high flyers and big box retailers are the big loser these days. And we'll talk about some quick ideas on easy hedging strategies. All this and much more on episode number 438 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, and how are you? This is Andrew Horowitz, and it is the Disciplined Investor, episode number 438 for the 15th of November, 2015. Of course, there's a lot going on. As we saw after the close on Friday, the announcement of the various and coordinated activities of just destruction, terror, and horrible murder, frankly, of the civilians in Paris. That is surely just a horrible thing from a personal level, and we our thoughts and wishes and hopes, and of course our minds and hearts are with everybody in Paris who's affected, and those of course not. And I think also I just have to take a note to mention, you know, the rest of the world. You know, what is going on? What is all this hatred and this terrible amount of terrorist acts that will last, I don't know, 20 years, has been escalating to a point that we attack civilians or civilians are attacked. It's just a terrible situation. We had all the leaders meet for the G20 meeting over the weekend where they were supposed to be talking about climate change and a variety of strategies for economic growth, et cetera. And a lot of it was taken up with what's going on with the potential for more global just these activities that are just terrible, just awfully terrible. Some of the linkage to many of the recent acts have also brought into light, and there's a big question mark as to, you know, are they related or aren't they? What happened in the recent plane crash and some other suicide bombings in Lebanon. So I think that one of the big things we need to look at as investors, as people talking about money, because that's what we do about, you know, here on this particular podcast, is to think about, you know, what's going to happen with markets. Now, already after the close, after a pretty bad day on Friday for all sorts of reasons, after the close on Friday, we saw that futures started to drop even without this news. There was nothing really on the news. It was just a continuation of a drawdown into the end of Friday. I guess there was a lot of people who didn't want to hold over the weekend for whatever reason as the soft and kind of battered markets were starting to pick up steam throughout the weekend and ended on Friday on the down part of the day. But I think more importantly, after the futures closed on Friday, we saw that there was a continuation because you still see, for example, SPY or DIA still open for a number of hours after the futures closed on a Friday. And they continued down. As a matter of fact, the low point on the SPY saw that after the close, an additional 1% was lopped off of the SPY ETF that tracks the S&P 500 after the 4 p.m. close. So there is potentially a significant amount of volatility that we're going to see. We'll have to wait until the European markets open, but clearly Asian markets and futures are going to feel some pain, at least temporarily, as there is this real big concern about what this means for Europe, what this means for the rest of the world. You know, Paris already closed their borders. We saw that Belgium closed their borders. Portugal's talking about it, and a variety of other countries, I think Poland as well, are kind of saying, hey, you know what, we were welcoming all these refugees, we were welcoming people in, but we don't know if we have the right controls in place. And unfortunately, this is the way they had to find out about it. So what we're seeing is that there could be some unnerve in the markets. And I look back at the 8/24, August 24th, Monday, after the Friday drop, and it kind of brings back some memories. Just a little while ago, we saw this massive drop, and whether it was, you know, machine-driven, algo-driven, whether it was a mini flash crash, whatever it was, it did recover a bit. And then obviously we went on to see a significant downside through September, and then it did pick up obviously into October. But the big question I've been asking, and we talked about on the show many times, is what was that whole move up in October? Was it related to earnings? Maybe some of the large caps in the U.S. It's probably more related to the thought that there's going to be a lot more stimulus provided by Draghi. The U.S. was going to hold back on raising rates, and China was going to come out with some other stimulus and stimulative measures. Already we saw that now a turnaround by the U.S. We saw that most every speaker out last week was talking about, well, we're going to be probably pretty much all in favor of raising the rate in December. The dollar moved up dramatically. Stocks started to sell off. We saw that Mario Draghi didn't really put any kind of number or date on an expanse in the stimulus efforts for the quantitative easing. And China had made a variety of moves that, you know, nobody trusts anyway. Obviously, we'll add in Japan to this discussion that there's not much more they can do but talk and talk and talk, because they pretty much have the kitchen sink and everything else in the entire household on the table right now to try to bring back inflationary trends to that country, which is just mired in a quadruple recession at this point, a quadruple dip recession. Let's take a quick look at what happened last week, do a quick refresher, talk about a little bit of the things that are coming up into this week, excluding the major issue that we're talking about now, and kind of set the stage for what are some of the things that you may want to be doing, looking at, and considering moving into what could be a very volatile week moving ahead. We did see that retail purchases came out, and there was a very small increase. It was an improvement, of course, but we saw that retail sales, generally speaking, were flat in August and September. So this incremental increase of 0.1% in October was better than feared. A major drawdown was gas stations, obviously. We would have to imagine that as oil prices came down, gasoline prices came down. Car sales were up a bit, and that offset some of the declines in the gas stations and the retail gas station purchases. Online retail purchases were up about 1.4% last month. Spending in restaurants and bars were up. We did see that while manufacturing is hovering right above the contraction line, that the service index is holding up very well and expanding very nicely. So that goes into play with this restaurants and bars number that was up 0.5%. But, of course, we're seeing that the National Retail Federation is also coming out with some numbers. They're saying that, they think holiday season sales and retail sales in that area are going to be up about 3.5% to 4%. They constantly come out with these kind of numbers. They're very much on the bullish side of things. They want everybody to think prior to the season that everybody else is spending, so why shouldn't I as well? And then they adjust their numbers, then we get the real numbers after the fact. So I really kind of put that whole National Retail Federation number aside and don't pay much attention to it. But we did see that a couple of different things. We saw the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index rose about 2 points to 92, and that was better than expected. The forecast was actually a little bit lighter. Actually, the final number was 93.1, I guess. Now that I'm looking at it, we saw that kind of get surpassed. And then it seemed that a lot of the reason for consumer confidence these days has been for the continuation of expectations of low inflation and better wage gains throughout the 2016 year. Now, about a year ago, we saw that number at about 88.8. That was the University of Michigan consumer sentiment number. So it's a bit higher now. That's very good. We did see that the wholesale inflation numbers declined 0.4% in October, and that's not really that good. You know, we're seeing that over the year, we saw a pretty significant decline, even though we saw that a variety of components of this didn't really move up. And we saw that if you take out certain things, it's worse than others. But bottom line, it's kind of holding steady. I guess when we kind of add it all up, subtract the things that aren't important, put it back in the things that are important, there's no inflation, folks, at least on the wholesale levels. Now, that's kind of good because we are seeing that CPI did kick up a little bit over the last several months. at least on a year-over-year basis. And if we can pass on additional costs to the consumer and manufacturers are getting a kind of cheaper cost overall, that's good for corporate profits at least. We did see that stocks did have a pretty ugly week. So that kind of when we combine all these things, that oil dropped. We saw that there was not much inflation. We saw that retail sales were just eh. Well, we did see that kind of combined into a real concern that maybe the recent run was a little bit too fast and too furious, and some of that need to be taken back. And we did see that the S&P lost about 3.5% plus for the week. The Dow lost about 3.7%. The NASDAQ lost 4.26%. And that was pretty ugly. Now, next week we have the earnings season is kind of coming to an end here. But we have something, a couple things you want to look at. Dillard's, I don't know if you've been looking at the big box retailers, Kohl's, Macy's, Nordstrom's. Horrible. Generally speaking, horrible. Kohl's was the one standout there. But they're having a massive inventory build. It looks like in August something happened. It almost looks like that shoppers stopped going to the big box retailers. Big box retailers are continuing to think that things were just doing great and just kind of kept on ordering and kind of filling their shelves. And what happened there was their inventories are tremendous. Now what's going to happen is that they're talking about major markdowns, slashing prices, getting rid of the inventory over the next few months. And that's going to cause a major problem for their earnings. They all talked about it in terms of some much worse than others. Clearly, Macy's and Nordstrom was horrible. Kohl's was a standout here. We'll see what happens with Dillard's. I would think that Dillard's probably going to be in the camp of Macy's and Nordstrom's. Some of the pricing pressure that was brought into these stocks. I mean, you know, Macy's down like, I think it was down 15 or 16%. Nordstrom's was down like 18%, 20%, I think, at the final tick of the day on Friday when they came out with their earnings. Kohl's was up nicely on their earnings. But you would think that there's something much more underneath the radar here of just simply people not spending. I'm not sure what it is right now. Could it be that online people are going and looking for prices that are better online and shopping elsewhere? They're not going to Macy's.com. They're not going to Nordstrom's.com. They're not going to their rack stores. They're not going to their off-price stores. Something is changing. Whether it's the mall traffic is reducing, maybe the big shock of the markets being down in August and September really concerned them. Something's just not right. It's just not going right. On the other hand, you see Amazon, aside from Friday, kept on picking up and making an all-time high. And we see a lot of the areas of retail, other than that, really kind of suffering. So maybe there's something to be said about the fact that Amazon is really taking over the market. However, I'm not counting on that because, again, if you look a little bit further out, it does seem like there's still some problems. This all started last year with the high-end retailers like the handbag companies, the Michael Kors, the Coach. You know, you look at these companies and there was something not right about the high-end shopper, where they were placing their money. And maybe then we saw this year the continuation of fall off for Walmart. And maybe we should start adding something together that something, again, is underneath the surface with consumers that they're not quite happy about. But we'll see more about that on Monday with Dillard's numbers. Tuesday, we're going to see the inflation numbers, the CPI. We'll be able to compare that to the PPI and see if there is still that range that is beneficial for stocks and companies in that area. We're going to see industrial output. Some numbers there. Also, Dick's Sporting Goods, Home Depot, Jack in the Box, Lazy Boy, TJX, and Walmart are going to be coming out with their earnings. Now, I think we should pay attention to clearly a few things. Home Depot would be good to pay attention to. TJX as a major discounter, seeing if some of the consumer trends that we're seeing that are not shopping in the big box retailers are spilling over into the major discounters. Walmart's another animal altogether. I want to see the revenue number for Walmart. That's what I want to look at. Earnings, we know there's going to be some problems here, but I want to see the revenue number and what's going on in terms of total sales. We're going to have minutes from the October Federal Reserve policy meeting on Wednesday. Housing starts as well. And we're going to see some earnings from Keurig Green Mountain. We're going to see Lowe's, Staples, Target, and Weibo, which is a WB symbol, which is the I guess the Chinese version of Twitter, I guess we can call it. We got the leading indicators on Thursday. We're going to look at things. We're going to see Best Buy. We're going to see Fresh Market, Gap, Intuit. We're going to also see Steinmart and Williams-Sonoma. And then on Friday, we're going to see the Foot Locker. Now, Foot Locker is going to be an interesting read because Nike has been talking about how great earnings have been and how many shoes they're selling and the backlog of sales, particularly in China. And the earnings number that they came out with last was very good and very impressive. Very surprising, by the way, because the slowdown in China was supposed to be something that really affected many companies. They're one of the standouts that really didn't get affected. The big question is going to be, is it a situation that is really focused on Nike and how they are performing and specific to Nike? Or is it the entire shoe area, and particularly sneakers and we'll call it athletic footwear? And we're going to watch what happens with Foot Locker on Friday. So kind of that's the week in view, excluding some of the major themes that are going to really be playing out this week. Now, obviously, getting back to all the things that are involved in this horrible situation in France, obviously, it's very clear how unprepared we all are in terms of countries in looking at the border security, in finding small cells, and this is going to raise a major flag around the world, it seems. And hopefully government's going to wake up. You know, we've been, I think at least, too much political correctness is going on. Been very nicey-nice. You know, we want to make friends with everybody. We're closing this jail. We're, you know, making friends with Iran, and hopefully they'll just do this for us and that. While meanwhile, we know behind the scenes, they hate us. They despise us. They just can't stand us. The bigger issue, obviously, is this whole radicalization of our youth and what is going on so terrible around the world that they are willing to, obviously, kill people to get their point across, at least if they don't believe in what they believe. So hopefully we're going to see some kind of a unification around the world. The one question is you're going to probably start seeing this week the idea that I'm sure this is going to start right off the bat on Monday. You're going to see the talking heads start to talk about how, with this in the backdrop, how in the world can the Fed raise rates in December? We have a situation where markets are in a turmoil. Let's say if that exactly happens, we have a situation where this could create a global slowdown as many people will stop traveling and doing various tourist activities, particularly in Europe. And, you know, the list will go on and on and on, and the rationalization will go on and on about how the Fed now, here's another reason why we can't raise rates. While we did see a really good jobs number, why we did see the continuation of CPI getting closer and closer, we'll see more about that this week, but getting closer to the 2% year over year, while we did see that the initial claims are still falling or at least holding at multi-year, multi-decade lows, and while we did see that housing starts are good and all these other things that are prompting the Fed to put their foot on the pedal for the potential hike of rates into December, small token hike, how could they do it at this point if this is going on? And what's really interesting is that if you really think about things over time, take any block of time, any 1, 2, 3, 5 month period of time, something's going on that we can make an excuse why the Fed can't raise rates. It could be a big issue like this and a horrible issue, or it could be something small. So you're going to start to see that. Watch for that and watch how markets react to that. But one of the things I thought we would talk about right now is the idea of hedging. I don't know if you ever thought about hedging or if you ever implemented hedging or you have any idea what I'm talking about right now, but essentially what we're talking about is some portfolio protection. And it comes in many shapes and sizes. You could do things like work with options. You can buy puts. You can buy the VIX, which is the volatility index. You could use ETFs that are inverse to equities. You can go to cash. Now, a lot of people think that, oh, I don't want to go to cash. If I'm in cash, I'm not making any money. Well, the one thing that cash does afford you in terms of your portfolio is something very simple. It affords you the potential to have money sitting on the sidelines, not losing, not making, but not losing money, and in a position that you're ready to make a move if there is a significant opportunity that arises. We're going to talk about some of those that may be coming up dependent on how the markets play out overnight into Monday. But market conditions over the last few months have clearly been problematic, right? So one of the things with hedging that you really do is you oftentimes look at, well, I'm going to take a hedge against major markets called a systematic risk hedge. So yeah, I'm going to hedge out market. I don't want market risk. I have all these stocks in my portfolio. And you know, in the event markets really come down, I'm going to buy a put on the SPY, or I'm going to buy a put on the DIA, or I'm going to do something that's a broad-based hedge so that in the event that markets do in fact come down, what happens is that will offset some of the positions I have in my current portfolio. The problem has been this. Hasn't worked so well over the last 2 months. And the reason is that large cap stocks, which dominate the performance in market cap weighted indices like the S&P 500, have been doing very well compared to some of the smaller stocks that are out there. So when you look at the markets, which were about until midweek this week, last week, about, I would say about 2 to 3% off of their high for the S&P 500. Meanwhile, you have stocks underneath that that maybe weren't the mega large caps that were pushing performance because everybody was throwing their money into the mega large cap names like the Microsofts, the Apples, the Googles, you know, and a variety of other names that were continuing to do well as their earnings came out good, as their guidance was good. Meanwhile, you see the sectors like retail, healthcare, biotech, energy, materials, getting absolutely obliterated. So meanwhile, if you had any of those in your portfolio, you may be seeing something like, I don't know, a 30, 40, 50% decline on those names in the last year. Meanwhile, if you were hedging with the S&P 500, guess what? You're only 2 to 3% off of the high. That option is not doing anything for you. Very strange environment in that there is this massive move towards large cap, and it could be a safety trade that we're talking about here, but a massive move towards large cap that is preventing hedging in traditional methods from working. Now, if there is a major sell-off like we saw from Wednesday through Friday, clearly those will work very well. But if you have your hedges set up for a systematic risk potential, like you may see after these acts that occurred over the weekend, and maybe a systematic sell-off, those hedges will work well. Now, if you've diversified again in this large cap area, well, again, those hedges would play out because you have large cap exposure in a significant way and you have a hedge against the large cap. So at least you're in the right ballpark. So let's talk about some easy hedging strategies here, okay? What you could do possibly to at least set yourself up. And we talked about cash already as a potential hedge, something that can give you just some safety. Now, if you didn't do this ahead of time and you're going to try to do this if markets open lower on Monday, Tuesday, well, that's not going to be very helpful. These are things you have to put in place before it happens, before the major downtrend occurs. And oftentimes a hedge is something that you want to put into play when it seems the most illogical of times to do so. Because when markets are moving up like they did throughout the month of October, and maybe you sense something is not exactly right about how they're moving up, why they're moving up, and at the rate they're moving up, those are the times you want to start adding hedges. You could use inverse ETFs. There's a variety of inverse ETFs on the small, mid, and large cap, on China, on Japan, on various sectors of the S&P as well. And you can match your sector to what your portfolio allocation is. So if you're heavy in, for example, energy, well, you can find the energy sector ETF and either short it or utilize an inverse, or you can buy a put on it as well. Now, with options, there's a different problem. There's some pricing issues that go into play in terms of when you look at the volatility that's included in pricing. There's also the time factor that's used when you look at pricing. But with options, you have to be right twice. You have to be right in direction, and more importantly, you have to be right in your time frame. Because when you buy an option, You're going to specify a particular price that it needs to get to before you're quote unquote in the money. And you also have to specify the date that it will expire. Whereas if you use an ETF or your shortest stock or your longest stock, there is no time frame. There's no, you get to hold it for as long as you like. So with an option, make sure that you go long enough and at a price that is appropriate enough to make sure that it is going to be in play and you don't just waste that money. Maybe go longer than you think. We've talked about this before. A little bit longer than you think, it may be the case that things will play out in a negative base, in a negative way. And again, we're talking about hedging here. You could utilize the VIX, which is the volatility measure, which spiked up last week, and I am sure will spike up again on Monday. You could do this through the option itself and buy the VIX option out, which has a heavy premium these days, may not be the most worthwhile thing to do. You could do it short-term through various ETFs as well, giving yourself a volatility hedge. So if volatility picks up, usually to the downside, this will move up in value. There's a variety to use. Now, I did mention this. I believe it was on, the DH Unplugged show last week or the week before, that some of these VIX ETFs have to be watched and only used for a very short time, maybe a few days to a little bit longer, possibly at the most. Once you start breaking down the trend, if it turns on you, that nice move that you saw will break down much faster often than it did move up. So if you buy something like VXX, generally speaking, it's a flawed instrument because the way they're buying it is not really aligned with the actual VIX you're seeing. There's a short-term VIX that they're really using, and they're using a variety of artificial derivatives inside the portfolio to replicate the volatility index, and it doesn't really work on a one-for-one basis. Now, even worse is if you use any of the doubles or the leverage, the two-time leveraged VIX instruments. The problem that you will have is that there is degradation over time. You may see a very significant pop and move if the VIX picks up very nicely. But realize something, and I think this is very important, that you only hold it for a short period of time. You can always buy it back. You buy it in through the period, maybe 1, 2, 3 days, maybe a week, and then you kind of get out of it and maybe buy it back. One of the things you can look at, if you look at a long-term price chart of UVXY, which is a two-time leveraged VIX, the short-term VIX, UVXY, you need to take a long-term look at that chart and scratch your head a little bit and wonder, how in the world was the price ever so high? There's been so many reverse splits because it keeps on getting lower and lower and lower, the price, as markets just either stabilize or move up a little bit. This thing gets clobbered. And because of the way there's a roll inside the contract where they look to buy the current VIX and the 1 month out and the 2 month out and how they keep on rolling that over time, there's a massive degradation of the internal valuation of that. So keep that in mind when you use those. I got some questions on that. I think it was last week. But just keep in mind that you're going to get a generic price degradation with any of these. So it may move a little bit more for some, a little bit less for others. But the bottom line is it is a flawed instrument. It's amazing how they still have this on the market. It's good for, again, it's good for intraday trading. It's good for the potential, if you really think about it, to look for the spikes in it and then hold your nose and just short it because it is, over time it's going to drop. Let's see what else. Oh, the other thing that I think is really one important way to look at hedging is also diversification of your trading strategies. You may have some buy and hold in there. You may use ETFs. You may use stocks. You may use mutual funds. You have to also look at diversifying your trading styles. Utilize some short-term trading if that's appropriate for you. Algorithmic trading. And of course, alternative investments can be something that you can use as well to make sure that you are properly diversified. I can't say enough how proper diversification in a standard long-term portfolio is probably the key way to make sure you stay out of trouble over the long term. Yeah, there'll be intermittent drops, and you know, depending on how markets behave at any given time, you may get really hurt or you know, be really rewarded. But generally speaking, the better diversified you are, proper diversification, utilizing different sizes, different regions, different types, different asset classes, different sectors, et cetera, blended in properly is your best bet with that. Just my two cents. Let's take a moment now and talk about something that I think is going to be really important. I want you to listen very carefully here, especially if you're listening to this on Sunday night or Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, prior to the Monday open. And this is a discussion of something it's will save you a lot of money if you do this right, and it will really hurt you if you don't pay attention to this. And it's the idea of stops. Sell stops on stocks to protect you from downside risk in the event that the stock moves beyond a certain level. It will automatically sell your position for you. Now, there's a couple of different types of ways you can set these up. You could simply say, you know, hey, I got a stock at $50. Okay, if it goes to $40, sell it, I'm out. Okay, so you put in a sell stop at the number 40, at the price of $40. And at $40, it triggers a market order, and it gets executed at that level. Order gets filled as a market order at 40. Now, you may get 39.75, you may get 40.1, you may, who knows? But it's a market order at that point. You could also do a sell stop limit. So in other words, it's a sell stop and you modify it with a limit price. So the same scenario, you have a $50 stock, you put in a $40 stop number where you say, well, okay, if it goes below 40, I want to sell it. But my limit is 39.75, meaning that if in fact this is triggered, you do not want to sell it lower than 39.75. Okay? So sell stop and sell stop limit. More importantly, when you have markets that are moving around in a very volatile nature, and if you think back to August 24th, if you had sell stops in many of these stocks, they were probably hit. Your stock was sold at some ridiculously low price as stocks were just getting obliterated right after the open on Monday morning, 8:24. And you had those stops, and that's why you had the markets really get ugly into the morning, because you had this cascading effect as sell stops were swept. Because as one sell stop is swept, it becomes a market order. It may get bid down. It then hits another market order. Then maybe it hits another stop, and so on and so on. And that's why we got some of those crazy numbers for prints on stocks on August 24th. JP Morgan was down at 1.15% because it had a cascading effect on the sell stop. So be very careful here, because when you look at these sell stop numbers that you have maybe in, you can be in a very precarious situation if stocks open up with significant pressure and there's not a lot of bids to buy, because all of a sudden you'll just see it fall through the floor. Now, what you could do is, on the other hand, if you were smart, if I was smart, if we were thinking about this, if we know that there could be extreme volatility at any given time, we can actually go in and set up buy orders at a very low price. So now we know that there is a situation where there's volatility. There are people out there that have sell stops set up. We may see these sell stops get swept. And where does the stock go if it really breaks down? So I took some time over the weekend to make a list of those stocks that would possibly be vulnerable. And if they were, and if it happened that things got really ugly, I put some prices down and I made a list of where those prices theoretically can go to in a really bad situation. I mean, down pretty hard, and put orders in if it got to that level. So for example, just as an example, we'll take a stock. Let's take Ford stock, for example. So Ford stock, when I look at the chart, I can see where on 8/24 it traded to. I can see where the support is on the last few weeks and going back even further. So we're going to target a price of, let's say, about $11 per share. Now what we're going to do is we're going to put in these trades as a buy limit. If in fact the stock opens up or somewhere during that morning or day goes to $11, we're willing to buy that stock at that price. Now, as of the close on Friday, Ford was trading at about 1377 was the last. Actually closed right about those levels. We'll call them about 13.75. So when you look at the chart, you can see that there was that major dip down on August 24th that brought it down to about 1050. But, you know, in certain circumstances, you want to be terribly greedy. But still, if we put an order in to buy Ford at 11, okay, we're talking about $2.50 from where it is right now. It's about 14% drop from the current price. Is that the right level for Ford? Maybe. Is it a level that may be a little overdone? Possibly. Am I willing to own it at that price? Yeah, sure. Looking at some of the fundamentals, looking at the technicals, etc. That's a price that I'd be willing to buy that stock if it happened to, for whatever reason, just break down and get to that level. I'll pick it up. So I made a list of about 20 different stocks, and I challenge you, if you're listening to this before markets open on Monday, to do the same. Look at some daily price charts of stocks. Find those that maybe were on your watch list before. Find a price that seems ridiculously low that on a chart you can see some long-term support or maybe even a point where it touched at that 824 lower, maybe even lower than that. And think about putting in some, just nibbling in, putting some orders in so that in the event the stock hits those levels, you're willing to say, hey, you know, that's a good price, I'll buy it. Because you don't get these opportunities very often. Now, you can't just do this. I mean, you could do this all the time. Just if there is some kind of crazy midday flash crash one day out of the blue for no reason, you could possibly get some great pricing on stocks and you could play that game for a while and you may never get hit for years. You may never have that situation occur for years. But when you do, just having a couple sitting on the sideline, you know, kind of in your brokerage account set up to go, that could be something good. You also have to monitor those because you may have a price that starts to come in and gets close to where you are, and maybe it's not a situation where there's just a the valuation and the pricing and something goes on, maybe technically in the markets, or there is a massive sell order that hits and cascading stops are going on. And that may not be the case because maybe the stock's just coming down. But you have to keep on reevaluating these and kind of keeping these fresh and keeping a list somewhere handy so that in the event that it does get to that kind of point of panic, that you're ready. Now, what we did see, if you recall, if you think back to 824, was that the markets opened lower. As a matter of fact, the futures on the Dow were halted. Prior to the 930 open, they were halted. They were down like 1,000. Markets opened and everything seemed okay, but about 15 to 20 minutes in, all of a sudden things just got out of hand. Now, first thing is, don't panic. Wait until the initial orders flush through the system. If there's an order imbalance or there's something else that's going on the open that can cause some bizarre pricing anomalies, easy for me to say. If there are some pricing anomalies that occur, I would say that wait till maybe 9:45 or 10 o'clock to make the decision rather than emotionally panic and just immediately sell your positions, but still have those backup buys in prior to all this. You don't know when things are going to get out of hand or not, because oftentimes you do see at the 9:30 bell, there is a lot of one-way action. Oftentimes you see a buy bias or a get into a long position bias at the open. But in this circumstance, it may not be the case. Again, use limit orders over market orders. Do not use market orders in this circumstance. Market orders can cause a major problem as the bid-ask spread could be really, really wide. I mean, you may get to a situation where you have a stock that's maybe trading at $13 traditionally, but it's maybe a $13 to $15 bid-ask spread. That's not going to be doing anything good for you. So make sure you use limit orders. Keep that watch list handy. Watch your stocks. If you do get a crazy pricing that hits on one of your stocks that maybe you own already, maybe you want to add a little bit to it. Possibly if it's a stock that you think is really good long-term, if that is the case, and if it's not a fundamental issue related to the stock, and if it's just a technical imbalance, maybe buy some more. And the other thing I'll mention to you is this. You may want to think about possibly fading the gap down. if you see a major gap down occur, because buyers usually will step in early. They'll try to prop things up right after the bell because they think there's good pricing, and all of a sudden selling comes over, buyers pull out, and you get another swoosh down. So you can look to, if you are looking to get short or you're looking to hedge even after things are looking pretty bad here, what you may want to look at again is waiting patiently until there is a time when markets start to come back up, because you do see oftentimes people thinking, hey, this is a good price, I'll buy here, and they do push markets up until a point where it starts to, you know, get to a point that they, there still is a massive amount of selling pressure and they can't hold it. And that being the case, you want to then start to fade that and look to put options or maybe some of the ETFs and things like that that we talked to. If you're fading the gap down, watch to see if buyers are exhausted early. And then also the other thing you want to watch for is what's going on with bonds. Look at TLT. Look at some of the bond funds, the various junk bond funds. Look at the whole bond market. Watch that, because bond traders may be continuing to buy bonds and trying to get out of stocks. So that's going to be important. And finally, watch currency action. See if the safety trade into the U.S. dollar and the yen are upon us. And if that is a strengthening process, you may see that stocks will remain a little bit soft. So just a little game plan for next week. Well, we're going to cut this show short because, to be honest, we're doing a lot of research over the weekend to see what the potential downside risk opportunities are for both hedging and for buying positions, things I've been talking about here today. I want to make sure that client portfolios in this current environment are set correctly, and we want to get ahead of the game. So we're spending time looking at hundreds and hundreds of stocks and where the potential opportunity lies. So hopefully you're doing the same. Hopefully you're making that list. Hopefully you're doing that. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about next week, just be ready for this. We're going to kind of go through the whole big picture of fundamental thesis and idea generation, things that you may believe are going on around the world. For example, let's take a look at the watch industry. Something you heard me talk about this a year ago, that I said, you know, it seems to me that less and less people are going to be wearing watches in the future because, well, for the most part, people are using their various smartphones. There's devices like the Fitbit. There's other things out there that you just don't need to wear a watch. Now, watches may be something you wear as jewelry, something you just, you know, you wore just before and for years, and you're just going to continue wearing it. But a lot of the young generation and the younger generations are not wearing watches as much. They have, you know, smartphones or smartwatches and all that. And I made the case that I thought that Movado and Fossil will have some major problems. Now, I don't know if you saw Fossil last Friday, but Fossil was down another 38% on Friday after an awful number. Now, they did also announce they're buying a, I guess it could be called a wearable watch Fitbit kind of company, where they're going to try to integrate that. Obviously, that is a tell right there that they are struggling and they need to change what they're doing, because they realize that they'll be out of business one day using the same model that they've been using for years. So when we look at these fundamental thesis that we are considering for different products, different strategies, buying habits, eating habits, health issues, technology, what are those? How do we plan to use those? And in what manner do we implement those in coordination with technical analysis, with trend following? So we're going to talk about the big picture of what are the disruptive technologies or disruptive products, ideas, movements in the world in terms of health or anything else that you may have thought about. Maybe it's autonomous vehicles. Maybe it's electric cars. Maybe it's you thought that, hey, you know what? Look at what's going on with maybe a few years ago that we have too much oil, but they're all talking about that there isn't. But yet I believe there is. Where is the problem going to come? How do I play this? So I'm going to talk about thinking about how you look at all of these big picture items and then how to implement them to make some money. And we could name a lot of things, like things I've been talking about and hopefully you've used, like Fitbit. I talked about how concerned I was about Fitbit as a product, as a company long term. GoPro. How many times did I beat the drum on GoPro? Now, we went long on that a little bit. Small position last week as it hit some, or the week, I think last week, as it hit some support levels. Not doing so well on it, but it's a very small position. We've been short Shake Shack. I've been talking about that. Went short on Best Buy recently. Twitter. How many years was I talking about how Twitter was a real problem? But then you can see the other side, where the benefits could be. What's the antithesis to what I'm talking about here? So we're going to talk about that next week, so be ready on those. And if you want, you know, maybe it would be a good idea at this point to send me some of your thoughts. I'm not going to steal them, don't worry. Some things that you want to share about what you think some major trends will be, and maybe ask me how I think we could play out. Now, this doesn't mean that they're all going to come to fruition, right? But what it does mean is that you have at least a game plan on some of this as an alternate to maybe just looking at some growth of earnings and growth of EPS, and maybe just not simply looking at technical analysis, but taking a much broader brush approach to what's going on, from things that may be phased out to things that may be phased in, to things that may be really falling and won't do well to things that may do really great. So if you want to send me some thoughts, I'll of course listen to them, and maybe we'll talk about those next week on the show. Send them to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged this week as well. We're probably going to look at the whole situation about global markets and what's going on, and dissect that a bit with John C. Dvorak and myself. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter, which is the Twitter handle Andrew Horowitz. Until next week, make sure to send me all that information, and think about hedging. Think about how to use those market orders, make that watch list, and get ready. I know you'll do great and you'll be profitable. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.